to open the meeting of the House Committee on Business and Labor for February 20th, 2013. I do have one announcement. We have the work session on House Bill 2070 is being carried over to Friday's agenda as we await the fiscal impact analysis. So that was off the agenda. We're going to carry it over to Friday. I'd like to open the public hearing on House Bill 2654. Jan, if you could please summarize the bill, please.
Hi, Madam Chair, committee members. This is the bill everyone's referring to as the social media bill. It prohibits the employer from compelling employee or an applicant from providing to provide their access to their social media account or to add the employer to their contact list, and prohibits retaliation. It also prohibits certain educational institutions from compelling the student or a prospective student to provide access to the social media account. Authorizes civil action against educational institution for any violation. There are no amendments before you.
Yeah, this is a bill that I'm going to be testifying on, so I'll turn the gavel over to Mr. Kennemer and then come back on up.
Yeah, we've opened the hearing, is that right?
I'm not certain. I wasn't listening. So if you would just open the public hearing, we'll be sure.
Okay, we'll open the public hearing on House Bill 2654, and we'll call Chair Doherty to speak, and I think Senator Starr. And we'll proceed from there. Please identify yourself for the record, and let's proceed.
Thank you. For the record, I'm State Representative Margaret Doherty from House District 35, Tigard and Southwest Portland. And good morning, fellow members of the House Committee on Business and Labor. I'm here to talk about House Bill 2654, what they refer to as the Social Media Privacy Act. In this day and age, social media is an increasing part of our lives. People use it to stay connected with friends and families, to share journeys, that kind of thing. But sometimes social media users share intimate details about lives, including their religion, race, marital status, sexual orientation, and on and on. Unfortunately, some employers and colleges have been taking advantage of this collection of information and demanding access to the employees' Facebook and other social media accounts, sometimes going as far as demanding login information and passwords. And this bill would prevent these kind of abuses. When we first brought the bill, this bill forward, I was ecstatic that many various stakeholders stepped forward to help us flesh it out. And I can assure you that we've been working hard with various groups, with the Senate, with various groups that are involved with this to come up with a great bill. And so there are some amendments that are going to be presented, and they will be brought to you when they're drafted.
Thank you, Representative. Senator, please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you very much. For the record, I'm State Senator Bruce Starr, and I have the distinct privilege of representing Western Washington County and the Oregon Senate, Hillsborough, Cornelius, Forest Grove, and North Plains, here to testify on House Bill 2654, and lend my support and ask for your work on this particular bill. And I'm pleased to join Representative Doherty in supporting this. The bill is very similar to one that I've introduced in the Senate, and there's actually two Senate bills that have been introduced. It doesn't make sense to move multiple bills through this process, so let's work together.
Great.
Whether it's the House bill or the Senate bill, I know that there's a working group that that's working on it. As the representative mentioned, employers shouldn't expect employees to give up passwords for Facebook or other social media. If you're applying for a job, you shouldn't be forced to give up your password and have a prospective employer require those kinds of things. I'm confident that we have a good group of folks that are working on this, that we can come to the necessary agreements to move a bill and a strong bill through that'll protect Oregonians' privacy. I think that's important. There's certain things that you shouldn't have to reveal as you go to get a job. And when we testified on a similar bill in the Senate, I likened it to you're going to apply for a job and your employer asks before you get hired to look in the trunk of your car, for instance. You know, some things you just shouldn't have to unveil or provide that kind of information. It's unfortunate that we even have to have a bill like this. It's kind of it's it, it for me, it kind of is a situation where we shouldn't have to pass a law like this, but unfortunately we do. And I think we have a good team working together, and I believe we'll get a bill done that has strong support, both House, Senate, and Republican, Democrat. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
So there'll be forthcoming amendments, is that correct?
Yes.
I believe so.
I believe so, yes.
Do you have any idea when?
Okay. Soon.
Soon, good. Representative Whiter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator, Representative, after going through your guys' Facebook page, isn't this a protection bill for the two of you?
Representative, do you want me to rule him out of order?
If you've seen my Facebook, you find out I lead a very boring life. So, yes.
Yeah, as you know, Representative, as public officials, there's very little that's private about it, any one of us.
Yes. We both lead very boring lives.
Representative Matthews.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the bill kind of goes broader than just applicants, and so it also applies to coaching and to perhaps somebody at the high school dance team as a coach. They might be curious about behaviors. But really, your intent is to force folks that can't force people to provide the access to this account, correct? And so I guess I'm just worried. I'm curious if you could provide just a global perspective of what kind of amendments you're looking at. In my area of public safety, I guess for me, having an applicant that would reveal what they've been up to in their social media sites for the first 3 years prior to employment could be very helpful. But I also know that, you know, compelling somebody to force give them a password, whether it's your email or your social media, that could be a bad situation too. But I'm just curious what kind of amendments we can look forward to, and you can just give us a broad definition. That would be great.
So I actually wasn't. I didn't sit in the meeting that occurred, but my staff provided me some notes here. We're working with the ACLU, working with some of the high tech groups and educators on this. I honestly can't specifically answer that question. There's folks I'm sure that are going to testify behind us that will likely be more specific about the amendments.
Yep.
I think what we're looking, though, is requiring folks to provide a password on your social media. As you hold a Facebook account, you can choose who gets to see that. As a legislator, I'm pretty wide open. I mean, virtually everybody can see what I post, but some folks, you know, narrow that to a specific segment of folks, and so you should be able to keep things you want private. And whether you're applying for a job or you're an employee or you're a student, I believe you shouldn't be required to provide password information, period.
Representative Matthews, just a point of information, Jan pointed out our next panel will have some amendment details for it.
That'd be
please
great.
Proceed.
A brief, really quick follow-up. I think for me, I'm going to be trying to get there. I understand what we're trying to do. I'm also very cautious in doing this simply because we say private, but when you put something online, it is now public. Whether you intend for it to remain private, it's not. Based on who starts communicating that further, you become part of perhaps an investigation at some point. As an example, cell phones, if you are issued a cell phone through your employer, that could become a matter of a public records request, and that would be everything from Instagram to Facebook to, you know, to your you know, Hansent media account. So I'm cautiously hoping we can get there, and I trust that both of you involved certainly eases my level of anxiety with this particular bill, but I appreciate both of you being here. Thank you.
If I could answer Gomez's question.
Go ahead. Sure.
I know that there's been concerns from public safety with the investigation and the background checks on applicants, and so we're working with them on that. And then there, initially it was with all educators, but I think the K-12 public school system is kind of out of the mix now, and we're looking more at the university system where people are applying either for jobs or they're looking at investigations. We're all working on the investigation aspect if people want access to social media in the course of an investigation.
Yeah.
So.
Thank you.
Representative Thompson, please.
One of my concerns about this bill is that it creates, to me, a false sense of security in that the stupid pictures I put of myself on my Facebook page are now illegal for you to use. The other problem is we're going to have to somehow educate people that it is public, and whatever you do on Facebook that's really stupid, you shouldn't be doing in the first place. rather than there needs to, I think it needs to be an educational component, that this says your employer can't use that information. But you know, I mean, I see this with some extended members of my family on the younger side, putting inappropriate things on Facebook pages that I don't think they intended for me to see. You know,
well, Representative
Kennemer, it's a problem, a social problem,
right,
of a lack of understanding that this is with you for life.
Yes.
And,
well, Representative Kennemer, Representative Thompson, we don't have an education component on this. I mean, I always say, you know, do you want your mother to see this?
Exactly.
Is about as much education as you know,
yeah,
I bring forward with this Facebook. But I don't believe
right
there's an education component, but some of the other people coming up to testify will be able to address that issue.
Okay.
Representative Kennemer, Representative Thompson, I always remind my kids that their grandmother is a friend of theirs on Facebook.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yes.
That's a good reminder. Any further questions or comments? Let's move on to our next panel. Thank you very much. Becky Strauss and Jim Craven, please.
Soul on Facebook.
Please give us your name and let's proceed.
Good morning, Chair Kennemer, Chair Doherty, members of the committee. Becky Strauss on behalf of the ACLU of Oregon. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of House Bill 2654 this morning, and thank you to Chair Doherty for her leadership on this issue. I think that the prior witnesses have provided really a good outline of the landscape, the problem that we're trying to address here. We've seen in other states, and in my written testimony, I cite some examples of employers compelling employees to hand over their username and password, either in a job interview or in the course of employment. As well, we've seen a couple examples, as Representative Matthews referred to, in the higher education setting, not only administrators or teachers compelling access to the username and password, but requiring the student or applicant to quote-unquote friend that student. I think generally what the concept or how we're looking to address this situation here in Oregon is to maintain our distinction that we have between public and private access to our personal information. The way that we communicate is very different, and those privacy principles should catch up with the way that we communicate now. Simply because an activity is taking place online should not mean that the person has less control when they deem that information to be private. And so, of course, to Representative Thompson's point, there should be an education element, not necessarily in the bill or open to that, but in the use of social media generally. Absolutely, how you portray yourself in public, online or not, should really be the reputation that you're looking to put forth for the public, and that's important for people to understand. What we're trying to do here is just make sure that the information that is meant to be private and that is truly private should be kept private. So I just want to touch on, again, my written testimony addresses this, but a few implications beyond just the account holder and what might happen in terms of an employer or a higher education institution's liability, and also just generally implications for the privacy of other people. For example, once a person is sharing access to his or her social media, they really are subject to not just monitoring at that time, but ongoing monitoring. And I think that carries implications for other people that the person is connected to on social media that are not an employee or a student directly. But then also I think there's a little bit of a problem that arises then for the employer, the higher education institution, that not only have they opened themselves up to discrimination lawsuits, frankly, if they're seeing something that maybe they're discovering a protected status through that information, but then What is their responsibility as they're monitoring? If they see something that's questionable, does the employer have a responsibility to act on everything that they then see in the future that's happening in the private sphere? I think these are all questions that I certainly don't know the answers to, but they're raised and they're implicated here as privacy is violated. I'll also note that, in fact, Facebook, which is a very common use of social media right now, does actually have in its own user rights and responsibilities a commitment from the user that, quote, you will not share your password, or in the case of developers, your secret key, let anyone else access your account or do anything else that might jeopardize the security of your account. So in fact, for a user to hand over that password to an employer or higher education institution would actually be violating the Facebook policy. I'm happy to go through the details of the bill if that's helpful, or maybe just ask questions if the committee has questions, and just want to close by bringing your attention to page 4 of my testimony that lists really the national landscape in terms of other states that are dealing with this issue. In the employment context, Maryland, Illinois, Michigan, and California have each passed laws. And then in the higher education, or really in the more broader education context, some do deal with K through 12. Delaware, Michigan, New Jersey, and California have done so. Legislation this session is pending in 25 other states. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Mr. Graven.
Good morning, committee. Chair Doherty, Vice Chair Kinnemer. My name is Jim Craven. I represent a national trade association known as Tech America. Our association includes about 1,000 member companies around the country, including some of the leaders in electronic communication, electronic commerce, and social media, such members as Facebook, Google, Microsoft, Apple, and Amazon. We come today to support the general thrust of the bill, as we have in several states already. Our support comes with a request to make some important additions and clarifications to what the bill covers and what the bill doesn't cover, and some of this has already been teased out by earlier questions. Core to these ideas, and we are, as Ms. Strauss mentioned, we're playing whack-a-mole in about 23 states with this bill and trying to conform as best we can that the bills look relatively similar in the various states. It's just certainly helps everyone know what the rules of the game are. But core to the amendments that we'll be offering soon are to ensure that while we take steps to protect individuals' private personal information, we also recognize that employers, not in the hiring process, but once a person is on the job, that employers have certain obligations to monitor employee conduct in such areas as harassment, theft of trade secrets, and the like. So that's the narrow balance that that we've advocated and successfully in several other states already before we get to Oregon. We also want to make sure that we don't do anything in this bill that would interfere with the ability of an employer to protect access to their own employer-owned or furnished equipment or employer networks. There's some very complicated internet blocking software that companies use to monitor while you're on the job type of performance with the company's IT equipment, oftentimes just to prevent viruses and to keep bad stuff from infecting the corporate network. I don't think that's the intention of the bill to interfere with that, and so we're working on a little bit of clarifying language in that regard. In the bills, the recently passed bills, mentioned that a bill passed in Michigan. The Michigan bill that was signed right before New Year's has essentially all of these issues in it, so we're kind of working off that. But I think narrowing it down, we maybe had made a bill very long in Michigan, so we're trying to tighten it up for the Oregon bill. And we've been working with the sponsors in the House and the Senate, with the committee staff, with the ACLU to get there. I think we're getting very close. I got yet a new set about 7:15 a.m. this morning. I haven't digested yet, but I think your staff, we had our little informal work group last Friday afternoon and rustled through some of this stuff, and I think we're getting very close. We are agnostic about the education piece in this bill. I know I've had some conversations where some people have some issues and concerns, but we're not here to speak to them other than to point out that universities are also employers. So essentially, everything here that affects employment also would affect universities. But the school part of the bill also affects admissions and some other issues. So with that, we'd be prepared to answer any questions, and we look forward to supporting this bill and moving it through the process.
Okay, thank you. Any questions of the panelists? Representative Fagan.
Thank you for bringing this forward. I do some employment work for the Ader Wynn firm, and we've talked about this issue in kind of business roundtables that we've done, definitely recommending against employers asking for this or even looking on Facebooks. As Ms. Strauss said, you can end up finding out information the employer doesn't have on an application for a reason, because you don't want to know certain things if an employee is expecting or, you know, other certain issues. So I just have a couple of questions about, so I see this is in Chapter 659A, so I'm assuming you're going to use the definition of employer from that statute. This probably is not an appropriate thing for an amendment, but just to maybe keep an eye on it during rulemaking, the definition of employer in that statute can be kind of narrow in certain instances. You would not want the situation where, for example, someone who's kind of a mid-level supervisor but wouldn't technically be an employer under that statute goes and compels someone underneath them to supply a password or add them as a friend. It's definitely not clear as the statute is written that that person would not be covered, and it certainly would be litigated. I think for the sake of employers, just being clear that you mean one thing or another is always helpful, because when you leave it open, it just opens up litigation, and that costs a whole lot of money. So I would, because this is such a, people usually have individual Facebook accounts or Twitter accounts, you wouldn't want, like I said, a mid-level supervisor who has a personal account to require someone under them to give them a password or friend them. Under the statute, that person is usually not considered an employer for purposes of Chapter 659A. So it might be something you want to watch for during rulemaking, or I don't know if it would be an appropriate amendment. But
Madam Chair, Representative Fagan, thank you very much. I think, though, I know Boley's here in the room, and Legislative Council. I don't know the origin that came up briefly in the Senate hearing last week, the exact same question, beyond my pay grade, but I thank you for that clarification, because who is an employer probably is pretty important, since this says employers cannot, or employers can. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Kenemer, then Mr. Matthews.
Thank you. You know, I appreciate this bill coming forward. I think we need some good direction and policy about employers and people's private information. I guess the thing that concerns me is there's a piece of this that, as I understand it, is probably an illusion, and that is with modern technology and good sophistication, a lot of this data can be found by individuals interested in pursuing it. You know, it's really out there somewhere in space, and somebody can intercept it. And so I just think we have to have that balance.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Mr. Strauss, in your testimony, you had mentioned if it's meant to be private, it should be kept private. I believe those were close to your words. And I guess my concern is, in a one-on-one conversation between two individuals, that is a private conversation. And I think that, you know, the ability to maintain that privacy occurs, and anything beyond that would be secondhand information or hearsay. However, in this case, a private conversation that goes out to, let's say you only have, you know, let's say you got 12 friends, there's a dozen people out there, that's now public. And my concern is that because that becomes a public conversation with those 12 friends that you assume to be private, that could end up coming into some sort of a discipline proceeding at some point. And quite honestly, employers can compel people to disclose any and all information in those hearings. And so I just want to make sure that we're going to still allow for an employer to have the ability to at least conduct the investigation if allegations come forward. And I don't see in the bill where, I mean, we say they can't compel, but I want to make sure that we're at least thinking about this situation, because it's not upon the date of hire, but they shouldn't also be precluded from being able to at least make that part of the investigation if it should come forward. And just a case in point as a scenario, if somebody were to make a, we'll just say, a hateful statement towards somebody in the public, and they serve the public in some form or another, whether it's public safety or whatever it would be, that could come forward to an employer, and the employer should take that very seriously, because they've got a representative of their firm now out and about in the public making these statements. This public happens to be 12 people, but it obviously got out. And so for me, those are my, as we have meetings on this, and I do appreciate your work, I honestly, and appreciate the chair and the good senator coming over and testifying, but I want to make sure that we're careful how we do this and that we don't all of a sudden slam the door shut. And to be quite honest too, some of this comes from the strong stance of freedom of speech that I've seen from your organization. And I want to make sure that, that it's not to the point where people get to say anything with no repercussion, assuming it was private when actually it's in social media. We are fooling ourselves if we think we can post things that are only seen by a handful of people that we want to see it. That's just a joke. So we got to figure this out.
Thank you. Chair Doherty, Representative Matthews, thank you for the question. I think you raise a lot of really important issues that certainly we've been wrestling with as we think about the employer perspective and make sure that we're not tying the hands of employers when they're conducting investigations. I think I want to analogize, and I realize that you're making making a distinction that social media is different, and I certainly hear that. And as I said, the our objective here is to carry some of those privacy principles into the use of social media. So I think of the offline analogy of, say, for example, a dinner party. So you have your 12 people on social media, sort of the equivalent of a dinner, private dinner party at home. As an employer is interviewing a potential employee, I think even in the public safety context, we would think that this is true. We would not expect that an employer be invited to the dinner party, regardless of what they're talking about at that private dinner party. And I think we're trying to import that into this context. So certainly if something happened that would rise to the level of criminal activity or even misconduct, I think that there are avenues such as having access through that third person or the target of the misconduct, for example, that would allow access to the information and allow the employer to conduct the investigation. I think that the concerns that Tech America is raising in regard to maybe a hole in that ability to do the investigation, we certainly are looking at it and hope that we can find an amendment that works.
Appreciate that. Thank you.
Madam Chair, Representative Matthews, let me just read. I haven't been authorized to release our scribbles quite yet, but here's the core of the language that has been adopted in other states and that we'll be pursuing. Something on the order of, nothing in this bill shall prevent an employer from conducting an investigation for the purpose of ensuring compliance with other laws and blah, 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 prohibitions against work-related employee misconduct, mm-hmm. based on the receipt of specific information about activity on a personal online account. So it's that, the employer can have that conversation that you reference. And in the footnote to that, and we don't really say it in the bill, you would still not be able to obtain their password and their login information, because then you have that forever until they change it. But an employer says there's an instance of harassment, or as you say, somebody at the fire station, I heard on Facebook, was flaming the community.
I didn't say fire station.
Yeah, I'm just kidding. For instance, the employer oftentimes has an obligation to say, let's come on in and let's chat about this. This is being alleged that your Facebook page has this racist comment on or whatever. We need to have a conversation. It doesn't say you need to give me my... necessarily you need to hand over your password, but it needs to say an employer can have that dialogue and try to find, you know, what the truth is in the matter. So that's okay. That's what we're trying to get at.
Okay, and we are going to need to move along a little bit, but do you have a follow-up, and then I've got Representative Witt?
Just the quick point I was going to make is that this has become the way of background checks now for a lot of employers, simply going and you know, not compelling for the password. I haven't heard of that problem occurring in Oregon yet. But they can just do a background check based on looking through friend searches, looking at those pages, looking at photos there. This can be Instagram. It can be Facebook. I think that's the one we're most familiar with. But I appreciate that. They're no longer making phone calls to the 12 people at the dinner party. They're just looking at their Facebook pages to see what they're posting. So thank you.
Representative Witt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Strauss, I just want to express to you my appreciation for the work that you and others are doing in making sure that Oregonians do not check their civil liberties at the door when they fill out an employment application or punch the time clock. Thank you very much, and thank you to the Chair for sponsoring the bill.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you. Representative Thompson?
We have a very heavy emphasis here on employers and educators or educational institutions. How does this apply, or does it apply to police, district attorneys, parole officers who might, I mean, I'm looking at the privacy side versus who has access to your privacy, and in excluding certain classes, does that imply they have access? No, I'm not necessarily against that. I just, you know, we have said employers and educational institutions, there are other people who may want to look at your private files, and in saying employers, are we excluding anyone not in that category, i.e. they're not covered?
Chair Doherty, Representative Thompson, that's not our intent of the bill. The reason we're bringing forth the concept in terms of employers and higher education institutions is because we've seen examples of that in other states, and so we're looking to prevent that from happening here in Oregon. Certainly open in the future if we feel that that's a problem to work with you. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions for the panel? Okay. And I know we are looking at the public safety aspect of this. Thank you very much. Okay, I'd like to call up Emma Calloway, Bridget Burns, and Elizabeth Kushwa, please.
People who can't do it, because everybody else can.
Ms. Calloway, would you like to start?
Yes, thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Emma Calloway. I'm the Legislative Director for the Oregon Student Association, and I'm here today to speak on behalf of the 100,000 students we represent across the state. And I'm here in support of HB 2654 for a couple of reasons. You obviously have passed through the bill, and I just want to speak to some additional specifics from students. So we believe that the information on social media and sites can be made public in many ways, and I understand that a lot of you are asking questions about being more responsible with that information. I think that's a discussion that students are absolutely having. This bill is about providing protections, and we believe that this information is complicated. We believe that there are lots of complicated relationships, especially for students. We have coaches, we have advisors on our campuses, we have ties between financial aid dollars, so there isn't a clear-cut line between employer and employees in the student life world, and we think that this bill could provide some real clarity to what information can or cannot or should be shared between some of those more complicated relationships where financing is exchanged or professional experience is exchanged. There are lots of other ties that tie students to professionals in our world. So we value the privacy of social media when we can obtain it, and we believe that teachers and administrators should never have to have access to phone conversations or photo albums in a dorm room, and this really fits under that same category for us. And we also ask specifically that pieces around, you know, a forcing of a social media friending be something that be protected for students. So we agree with this bill. We think that it provides some clarity, and we ask for your support on HB 2654.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Doherty, Vice Chair Kenemer, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Bridget Burns. I'm the Chief of Staff for the Oregon University System, and I'm here speaking to you today on behalf of the 7 public institutions here in Oregon. We have no position on this bill. We just wanted to put for the record that no Oregon University System institution currently or has plans to use Facebook or social media passwords as a condition of admission. And the perspective that we are coming at this bill is from the position of public safety and worrying about risk management and thinking about the needs of our students. There are certain extenuating circumstances and situations on campus where the university has a due diligence obligation to investigate. I'm talking about workplace or sexual harassment, NCAA compliance, risk management, challenges, public safety, athletics, and student conduct, where social media could potentially be a part of that investigation. The universities need to have tools, not necessarily credentials or passwords, that's not something that we're interested in, to investigate and monitor social media communication as they relate to these investigations. And again, I would say these investigations are in extenuating circumstances. So I'm happy to answer any questions, but otherwise, that's our position on this bill. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Ms. Kushwa?
Good morning, Chair Doherty, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Elizabeth Kushwa. I'm the Legislative Director for the Bureau of Labor and Industries. Boley is in support of House Bill 2654, and we believe we could be for the amendments. Although in concept we haven't seen them yet, we have to take a look at those. I want to give you a little background on process and then kind of clarify some questions that came out of the Senate last week, so that you can have that information that we've that I have for you now. Procedurally, we're concerned about compelling a Facebook password or any social media password as a condition of employment or as a pre-employment background check would expose information that you are not allowed to ask for in other ways: age, pregnancy status, ethnicity, religion. And those are things that we are concerned about for an unlawful discrimination, potentially. But as to process, we would use this as the same process as any other violation. We would receive a complaint. The complaint would be investigated. The employer would have a chance to respond. This would then proceed to a hearing. The penalties in this bill would be consistent with other violations, and we don't expect very many of them. There was a question that Senator Prozonsky asked as if this applied to both public and private employers, and the answer is yes, it does. And Senator George also was concerned about the idea of several employees perhaps harassing another employee or just internal discrimination practices and any liability to an employer. And the fact is the employer is not allowed to, you know, wink and understand that this is going on. If there is discrimination happening and the employer is aware of it, it is incumbent upon the employer to investigate. But if this information comes out in a different way, the employer is not liable. So I would be happy to answer any other questions. Excuse me, one more thing. As to Representative Fagan's comment about 659A and the definition of employer, that's a conversation that is continuing.
Okay, thank you. Any questions of the panelists? Okay, thank you very much. I see no one else on the list. Is there anyone else that would like to testify on this issue? Well, seeing none, I close the public hearing on House Bill 2654. And open up a public hearing on House Bill 2241. Jan, if you could summarize what the bill is, please.
I will, Madam Chair, committee members. This bill comes from the Department of Consumer and Business Services. It increases the oversight of corporate governance on insurers and gives the director a greater authority over the acquisition of insurers. And the bill encourages greater cooperation and communication between the states with the National Association of Insurance Commissioners.
Okay. We have here Mr. Savage and Mr. Latham.
Chair Doherty, Vice Chair Kenimer, Lou Savage, Oregon Insurance Commissioner. House Bill 2241 is a bill that should be an easy bill for you folks to pass forward. One of the primary responsibilities of the insurance division is to ensure financial solvency of insurance companies. And the reason is that you need funds to pay claims for consumers. And when we talk about consumers, we're not just talking about individuals. One of the primary consumers of insurance products are businesses, small businesses and large businesses, to protect their own financial health. So we really see House Bill 2241 as a part of our consumer protection mission. And it is a piece of legislation which has been passed in other states, part of the NAIC model laws that go throughout the country to have uniform laws on insurance regulation. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Russell Latham, who's our chief examiner for the division. I also just want to point out that we have had communication from Standard, which is one of our big domestic insurers, and they are in support of this bill.
Thank you, Commissioner. Vice Chair Kenimer and Chair Doherty and additional members of the committee, for the record, my name is Russell Latham. As Commissioner just said, I'm the Chief Examiner of the Oregon Insurance Division of the Department of Consumer and Business Services. I'm here today to talk to you about House Bill 2241. And this bill updates portions of the insurance code that regulate the financial affairs of Oregon insurance companies. The bill increases consumer protection by giving the insurance division the tools to make sure that the cash and the investments an insurance company holds are safe and they remain with the insurance company and they're not transferred to an affiliated company of the insurance company. And also, the bill also gives us additional tools to look at intercompany transactions to determine if the transactions are appropriate, and it gives us the authority to take action if those transactions indeed are not appropriate. The insurance code also gives us statutes regarding acquisitions and mergers of Oregon domestic insurance companies. And a lot of the provisions in this legislation or in this bill address the lessons learned during the financial crisis of 2008. And during that crisis, the nation started to review the processes and the laws that the various states had enacted and saw areas in which these statutes could be improved. And the state regulators found that they indeed could be strengthened to avoid the AIG situation that occurred during the financial crisis of 2008. And as Commissioner Savage just mentioned, the bill also includes nationally developed standards that's going to assist the division maintain its accreditation with the National Association of Insurance Commissioners. And as we look at the bill, we have grouped the provisions of the bill in three general categories, the first of which encourages regulator-to-regulator cooperation and communication. The bill permits the director to share information with other states that is related to acquisitions of insurance companies. The bill also allows the director to establish or participate in supervisory colleges, and that will enable the division to have communication with not only other regulators in this country, but also parties that regulate insurance companies or affiliates in other nations. But because what this is designed to do is to look at companies that have international operations. If you will, it looks at walls and windows. And what I mean by that is insurance regulation has established walls around insurance companies to ensure that their assets are protected. But what this bill does, it also provides us with windows to see how non-insurance company affiliates are operating and how that is going to potentially impact insurance companies. The bill also requires advance notice of acquisitions of insurance companies. It allows the director to participate in joint hearings with other regulators when other states are involved in a change of a control of one of their domestics. It also requires a person that proposes to acquire or sell an Oregon insured to notify the director of its intent to acquire or an owner's intent to sell their ownership and interest in an insurance company. It also gives the director the authority to determine whether the transaction is going to substantially diminish competition or tend to create a monopoly. It also allows the director to assess a civil penalty or issue a cease and desist order if the transaction is going to end up being hazardous to the insurance buying public. Another section we wanted to mention was the increase of oversight of corporate governance. Insurance companies are going to be required to file an enterprise risk report that allows regulators to assess the risk of the overall holding company rather than simply the insurance company. And an enterprise risk would be any risk that occurs at the insurance holding company level that, if it is not remedied, could falls could cause a financial hardship to the insurer or the entire group of insurance companies. It also specifies civil and criminal penalties for violating the provisions of this bill. It also requires affidavits that state an insurance company's board of directors is responsible for corporate governance and internal controls. And also, it requires the board of directors to establish an independent committee. And by independent, I mean the members of this committee are not employees of the insurance company or the parent or an affiliate of the insurance company. But those, and that committee is going to be responsible to oversee audit matters, board nominations, and also officer composition or compensation. Again, an attempt to provide the regulator more oversight of the holding company as opposed to strictly looking at the insurance companies that we currently regulate. As Commissioner Savage has mentioned, the industry is in support of this bill, and one of the reasons they are supportive, not only do they see the benefits of this type of legislation to prevent the types of occurrences that happened in 2008, but it's beneficial to companies to have uniformity of laws among states. So the industry is in support of this legislation. So thank you for your time, and I would be happy to answer any questions.
Hey, are there any questions of the panelists? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah, close the public hearing on House Bill 2241 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2524.
Good morning, Chair Doherty and members of the Business and Labor Committee. My name is Paul Holvey, State Representative from District 8, and I am the sponsor of this very simple bill. I'm sure that you will hear some controversy around it, perhaps, but it is a concept that came to me from some constituent issues and some observations and talking to contractors in the industry as well, who may or may not be willing to come forward and talk about this particular issue in fear of alienating themselves from the real estate and financial industries. But House Bill 2524 would limit some exemptions for licenses required by the Construction Contractors Board. By removing these exemptions, financial and real estate businesses would be required to use licensed contractors to actually perform work that is under the authority of CCB and ORS 701. However, these businesses would still be able to arrange for and contract for work to be done. Presently, renovation, remodeling, or repair work performed on structures for the purpose of resale to the public or for clients of these industries can be done by unlicensed individuals and businesses. This practice fails to provide the same consumer protections or safety standards that would be required of a licensed contractor. Not only does this threaten the value and safety of the structure, but it also poses a serious risk to the workers making the repairs, as they may not be afforded the same workplace protections that a licensed contractor would be required to provide. Additionally, this poses a threat to the businesses of many licensed professionals in the construction and contracting industry that take actions to ensure that the quality of their work and the safety of their employees meet the standards set by the licensing board. It is critical that we make sure all repairs and alterations are done by reputable and reliable contracting professionals in full compliance with state licensing procedures, and that the work and workers are covered by adequate bonding and insurance. When a consumer buys an as-is property, they should have confidence that the work performed on the property meets a quality and standard that is expected from the construction industry. I urge you to move this bill forward, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, do you have any questions for Representative Holdy? Representative Widener.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just real quick, Representative Holdy, a lot of people do work on their houses themselves, and you pay the home inspector at the time who's supposed to catch that. Anything that's not up to code or done right, that's the job of the home inspector. So I'm just wondering, is that tied into it? I haven't got a chance to go through the bill totally.
Doesn't impede a homeowner from performing their work on their own house. No.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay. Thank you, Representative Holvey. We have Tim Martinez and Sean Miller signed up to speak. And then also, if any of you have questions, Craig Smith of the CCB is here to answer any questions you may have.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Sean Miller. I'm here today on behalf of the Oregon Rental Housing Association. And we just have some concerns on House Bill 2524. When you look at on page 2, lines 39, dealing with real estate licensees, define statute ORS 696010. And so it's arranging for one or more licensed contractors to do the work on the property. And, you know, from a landlord's perspective or a property manager's perspective, they are agents of the owner under the real estate statutes. And so in this case, it appears that the bill would, again, if they were to hire a licensed contractor to come do, let's say, paint on the property, then the property manager themselves would have to be licensed contractors, is the way I understand the bill. And so it just seems like redundancy in that case. And so we're just concerned if with that particular point, and I just want to, you know, work with the sponsor of the bill on the, you know, on the language, if that's the intent, because of the concern is that we just don't feel that it's needed in that case, because again, the public and the owners being protected because they are using a licensed contractor, even under the proposed language, bonded, inspected contractor to do that work. And so again, you're just requiring the property manager to also be licensed. And so with that, that concludes my remarks, Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Martinez.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I apologize for being out in the hall when you called me. Tim Martinez here on behalf of the Oregon Bankers Association. I did have the opportunity yesterday to meet with the sponsor, Representative Holvey, and talk a little bit about the bill. As I've received more information from my members since the since our meeting, I think the one piece that causes us the most concern is the piece about owning the property. Many times when banks unfortunately end up foreclosing on borrowers, they put their owned real estate into a subsidiary rather than the bank itself. So we would have some concern and would certainly like to work with the sponsor of the bill to see if we can address that in the language that's in there. It's probably our biggest concern. In talking to banks from around the state, I think it's general practice that they do use contractors, so we're not quite sure what the issue is that he's trying to address with the banking exemption. And again, we can continue to talk about that. But those are the two issues. One, that we do generally use contractors, licensed contractors, for any remodeling. There is a de minimis exception. I read the bill closer after we talked. There is a de minimis exception of $500. I don't know if anybody's hired a contractor lately, but that is fairly limited. You know, we might, again, as we discuss further with Representative Holvey, the idea of perhaps raising that or making it a little more solid, because it's a very broad definition. In fact, I pulled a copy of the bill here. Let me just grab that real quick. It says, where is it here? I can talk to the sponsor of the bill, but it is very, very broad in describing what that might be. So we would like to work on that as well. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Any questions of the panelists? Okay, and as always, we encourage you to get together with the sponsor of the bill to see if you can work out the issues and get some good legislation.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. We have no one else signed up. Anybody else speaking on this bill? And if you could identify yourself for the record, please.
Thanks, Chair Doherty, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Paul Rainey with the Oregon Association of Realtors. Today I'm here in opposition to House Bill 2554, which limits the existing exemption a real estate licensee has from getting a construction contracting license when they're managing property on a contract they own. In the 2011 legislative session, the Oregon Real Estate Agency went through and passed Senate Bill 156, which updated in statute the affirmative rules duties a real estate licensee or property manager owe property owners. This legislation would require a real estate licensee or property manager already licensed under ORS 696 to also get a construction contractor's license for performing routine maintenance on property that they are managing unless they use a licensed contractor for these activities. Currently, if you need to get a building permit, you're required to use the licensed contractor. I don't think there's any issue there. But when you're managing the property, we feel that you should be able to, under the scope of your license, do and perform routine maintenance. So in closing, I'd ask that you retain the existing exemption for real estate licensees. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Any questions?
Thank you. I have to ask one. So is the work performed, short of having a building permit, is the work performed by the management companies, are they covered by bonded, similar to that of the construction contractors? Are those companies bonded insurance to a similar level that the construction contractors are bonded and insured?
Chair Doherty, members of the committee, I don't know specifically what bonding requirements they have. I do know that they are licensed as property managers. I'd have to look into that and get back to you.
Follow up. And so are they also subject to the same sort of educational requirements around construction, building envelope issues that the construction contractors are?
Chair Doherty, Representative Holby, I don't believe, I think there's a different standards when you're looking at specific to the construction contractor licensing, but what we're talking about here is routine maintenance. We're not talking about tasks that would require a license.
Follow up. So is routine maintenance defined in statute?
Not to my knowledge.
So where do you draw the line for routine maintenance versus replacing walls and doing dry rot repair and things like that?
Chair Doherty, Representative Holvey, I think that's a good question, and I actually think that limiting this exemption provides less clarity on that, in that right now, if you're doing touch-up painting, would that require or would it not? I think that anyone who owns property, if they're going in and fixing repairs, doing that, if they're acting within the scope of their professional license, they should have the ability to manage that property and perform routine maintenance like that.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions of the panelists? Okay, thank you very much. Okay, seeing nobody else, I close the public hearing on House Bill 2524 and open up a work session on House Bill 2590.
Chair Doherty, I move to adopt the -1 amendments to House Bill 2590.
Okay, Representative Kennemer adopts to move the -1 amendments to House Bill 2590. Is there any discussion? Okay. Is there any objection? If not, the amendments are adopted.
Madam Chair, I move that House Bill 2590 be reported out of committee with a due pass as amended recommendation.
Okay. Representative Kenemer moves that House Bill 2590 be reported out of committee with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Madam Chair, I just want to correct for the record, as amended.
As amended. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Okay. Seeing none, Brandon, could you call the roll, please?
Representative Thatcher?
Aye.
Representative Thompson?
Aye.
Representative Witt?
Aye.
Representative Widener?
Aye.
Representative Fagan?
Aye.
Representative Matthews?
Aye.
Representative Holby?
Aye.
Vice Chair Representative Barton?
Excused.
Vice Chair Representative Kenemer?
Aye.
Chair Representative Doherty?
Aye. Okay, the motion passes. Do we have a carrier on this? Anybody like to carry this bill? Mr. Kenemer, Representative Kenemer?
Lots of competition for this. You can have a Representative Kenemer.
Whoever's going to be the
step up a little later date.
Madam Chair, may I suggest whichever one would be shorter winded? That's tough between the two of them.
I would suggest that two of them duke it out themselves.
That comment's not public to you, Representative Whitaker.
That's right. Okay, so Representative Kenemer will be the bill on the floor that closed the work session on House Bill 2590. And open a work session for introduction of committee bills. And again, it goes without saying that a vote to introduce a committee bill does not indicate one's support for the concept, but only to have the concept brought to the to be referred to for possible consideration.
Madam Chair, I move LC Draft 2523, dated February 18, 2013, LC Draft 2773, dated November 9, 2012, LC Draft 3007, dated February 18, 2013, LC Draft 3282, dated February 15, 2013, LC Draft 3285, dated February 11, 2013, LC Draft 3517, dated February 7, 2013, LC Draft 3571, dated February 14, 2013, and LC Draft 3379, dated February 7, 2013, be introduced as committee bills.
Okay, thank you. Representative Kenemer moves that LC Drafts 2523, 2707, 3282, 3285, 3517, 3571, and 3379 be introduced as committee bills. Any discussion? Is there any objection to these drafts being introduced as committee bills? Okay, hearing no objection, the motion carries and the LC drafts will be introduced as committee bills. I close the work session for introduction on committee bills. Okay, any other business before us? I do want to remind you that we have held over House Bill 2070 waiting for the fiscal on it, and we're holding it over till Friday. Okay, anything else? I adjourn the meeting of the House Committee on Business and Labor.